There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to eighth time. Let's get the work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, my opinion is always the same on that. I mean, we're with Nick and his staff, we're always looking to make our team as good as we could possibly be, right? Do we have a heightened sense of just making a move just to make? No, we're always looking to add to our team, add to our depth. That's something we do constantly throughout the year. So there isn't just a mad rush now at the trade deadline for us to change our approach and how we go about managing our roster. Our roster management doesn't change. Right? We're always looking to upgrade.
All right, that was D'Amico Ryans. Welcome in, everybody. How we doing? It's a Wednesday. Trade deadline is behind us, and off we go with this version of the 2024 Houston Texans and the Lions coming to town on Sunday. And it's a good week, man. It's a good week. Sunday Night Football coming up. Despite how everybody might have been feeling at 3:01 p.m. yesterday as they were watching several teams around the AFC make moves here and there and make tweaks to upgrade the roster, Texans kind of stood pat. The only move the Texans made was shipping out Khalil Davis for a seventh-round pick. Welcome in, everybody. How you doing,
Seth? Outrage. You got rid of Khalil Davis. The backbone of the team.
Something's up with your microphone, buddy.
Of course. Yeah. God damn it. I'm talking into the wrong one.
Okay.
Details.
Yeah.
These are the technical details that elude me.
What's the other one for?
Small tasks and errands.
Gotcha. Okay.
No, it's a longer... This one that I speak into is a higher quality mic, but it's a pain in the butt. The other one is just for when I do streaming and
YouTubes
stuff.
And stuff.
My YouTube stuff. Yeah,
you were on. I didn't get to watch your YouTube last night. I saw that it popped up as it always does. It pops up on my suggested views. Mm. But I haven't had a chance to watch it yet because I knew that you and I do a show together and I'll get a chance to talk to you.
Right.
But I saw that it was about your reaction to the trade deadline yesterday.
Well, the biggest thing I kept trying to remind myself, as many of our listeners pointed out, like, hey, why is everybody making such a big deal about the trade deadline when it's nothing like Major League Baseball or anything? And that is true. There were about 15 players traded yesterday. It's not like teams are typically, football is different. It's not like all of a sudden you can bring in the missing piece to your relief staff or something quite as simply. But there are big impact moves that have been made at the trade deadline that it's enticing. It's enticing. You think about Christian McCaffrey to the 49ers. Think about Roquan Smith to the Ravens a couple years ago. Von Miller to the Rams. In a year they would end up going to the Super Bowl. It's just like those things happen and they do matter. Yeah. So you're just wondering, all right, is there something up the Texans' sleeve? So I'm not overly distraught about the fact that the Texans didn't do anything notable. The one thing, I know Khalil Davis, the defensive tackle who was traded for a seventh-round pick to the 49ers, he's kind of like a cult favorite among some people, and me too. Like, I like him just because he's a role player, but when he shows up and when he makes plays, he tends to do it pretty violently.
Yeah.
So I think people respect that and like that. But with Jerry Hughes coming off of IR, with Jeff Okuda coming off of IR, hopefully with Nico Collins coming off of IR, we're going to have to cut some people anyway. And a defensive tackle was probably going to get cut. So it was because it's one of the deepest, even though you don't have studs, like all pro type starters, you've got really a lot of depth at defensive tackle. So either Khalil Davis or Kurt Heinrich or somebody like that was probably going to be let go or sent to the practice squad. So this makes sense.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, and you got Mario Edwards coming back from suspension.
Oh yeah, Mario Edwards too. Yeah.
So there was a numbers issue with that. You know, and that trade. It's basically a weird comparison, but it's and this was more of a numbers thing, but like. The Texans knew they were going to cut Khalil Davis. They've got contacts in the building over at San Francisco. They've traded defensive tackles for seventh-round picks before to San
Francisco.
Kind
of our thing.
Yeah.
It's just what we do.
It's their kink.
We trade off defensive tackles
to San Francisco for seventh-round picks.
For loose change, right.
It's a very, very specific fetish, but they do it. So I think as I'm watching the reaction and as I'm reacting myself to the trade deadline yesterday, look, I am disappointed that there weren't some tweaks made and some depth moves made. Forget about left guard for a second. There were no offensive linemen that got moved in this trade deadline. So it's really hard to grasp what the market is. That's my first thing, Seth, when I look at the trade market. Before reacting going, you didn't make any trades, I take a step back and go, okay, we don't know what the prices were for these deals, you know, that they may have been talking about. And these may have been deals that if you look at the price, you said, okay, I wouldn't do that either. That there were no offensive linemen moved, and as you pointed out earlier this week, it's rare that offensive linemen do get moved at the trade deadline. It's really hard for me to say they should have done this or they should have done that at left guard. They're obviously rolling with what they have. I will take not making any deals as a sign that Jared Patterson's concussion issues are okay. Hopefully, we'll find out more today.
Yeah,
I look at some of the deals that were made at wide receiver. Khalil Herbert going for a seventh-round pick, a running back going to the Cincinnati Bengals. Like, those are the types of things yesterday where I'm like, I might have done one of these. There were so many deals that were made for guys that they're not game changers, except DeAndre Hopkins, but that's a whole separate thing. But the guys that got traded in the last 48 hours, you know, guy, or even last week, you know, Deontay Johnson, I get it, he may be kind of a turd, but the guy goes for a day three pick swap. Khalil Herbert, I mentioned, goes for a third round pick. You look at some of the prices that these guys are moving for, and I would have gone. I look at it, I say, okay, well, I might have done that just to go get another receiver or go get another running back, because I do think fully healthy, those rooms are fine with me.
Yeah.
But if there is an injury to either Tank Dell or Nico Collins, you're in a struggle. You know, come postseason time.
Yeah, it's tough where I'm trying to be, like, again, the NFL trade deadline just isn't the same as it is in baseball, and yet very significant deals do happen. Yeah. The Herschel Walker trade, by the way, was a trade day deal, or a trade deadline deal. A lot of people think that was an offseason thing. It wasn't. So, you can make notable moves, but it's not that, for whatever reason, it's not as easy to pull off. I think the other thing that makes me feel better about it is, all right, the Texans had a very aggressive offseason. And I think that kind of primed the pump to where we're thinking, well, okay, Nick Caserio is one of the most active GMs in the league in terms of trading, signing, and releasing players, all of that. And it doesn't feel like, okay, wow. You know, you look at what the Chiefs, the way they've operated. I know Caserio's only made one trade deadline deal. And in his career, and so far he still hasn't brought in any players. It's all been dishing players out at the trade deadline.
Yeah.
But the one thing you have to think about is, all right, to bring somebody in at this point right now, you're going to also have to restructure some of the veteran players' contracts. So do you have an appetite for pushing Laremy Tunsil's money off into the future or Titus Howard's money off into the future? I don't. I think I need Blake Fisher to replace one of those two guys. And right now, I'm still not 100% sealed on, you know, Titus Howard living up to his contract. Laramie Tunsil paying the amount of money you're paying to Laramie Tunsil when there's at least 15 other offensive tackles in the league they're playing about at his level right now.
Yep.
I'm not overly distraught over it, but it would have been nice to have something.
Yeah.
You know what I compared it to, Sean?
What's that?
I compared it to kind of when you're like, let's say you're not really big into surprise parties, but maybe you get a hint that somehow you're going to get a surprise party for your birthday.
Okay.
And you're like, oh, okay, it's not something I really care about, but now that I think about it, yeah, it'd be kind of fun and nice. Yeah, okay, this will be cool. I'll be into this. And then you find out that there is indeed no surprise party.
Yeah, you whip the door open on your birthday and there's like nobody there.
So now it's like something I didn't even really anticipate or wasn't thinking about. But now that you piqued my interest, I'd really like it. Oh, and now you're telling me there's no surprise party. Go die.
Right. Yeah. Right. Go die. It's 6:09. I love it.
Yeah.
I think this text to the 5 Hour Energy fan line, 5 Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football super fans. I think this kind of captures probably my feeling on it to a degree. The fact that Nick Caserio lives in the 5th through 7th round pick swap and trade world and lots of deals seem to involve those types of picks was disheartening that no moves were made. And I think I'm not disheartened by it. Like I know there's some people yesterday that are acting like we passed on a quarterback with the number 2 overall pick or something. Like it's this.
Yeah.
To me, this wasn't going to be anything that was going to change their trajectory of their Super Bowl chances as is. To me, this is something where, like, man, you can't go through the rest of the season with a running back room that is just Joe Mixon. You can't go through the rest of the season praying that Tank Dell and Nico Collins stay healthy when the next guy up is Robert Woods, like that sort of thing. And to shop for those types of players, it was very evident yesterday. Like, for depth at wide receiver, the price was going to be somewhere on the back end of day 3, 5th, 6th, 7th, swap and picks, whatever. The price for a depth at running back was going to be a late pick. And so that's kind of – and then cornerback is an interesting one because that was the biggest deal that got done yesterday was Marshon Lattimore.
Yeah.
And that was one where, you know, the big price for that, the big ticket item in the Marshon Lattimore deal, other than Lattimore himself – was the 3rd-round pick that went to New Orleans from Washington. There were some day 3 shrapnel that kind of got swapped back and forth. You know, that would have been a deal that I think would have gotten Texan fans excited, that you put Lattimore, who, by the way, is still recovering from an injury, put him on the outside on one side, Stingley on the other, bump Lassiter down to the slot, and now off you go. You know, that kind of thing.
I think part of the problem, and especially, with bringing in Lattimore, that's a tricky one because, all right, and then you've got 3 starters, a couple of them young guys on your team that you're going to pay Derek Stingley most likely here in the next couple years. Maybe that gets a little dicey and a little touchy. It would have been nice to just be chock full of guys that can play man in the back defensive backfield. But I think Okuda coming back, they probably feel a little bit better about that. Mm-hmm. So the biggest, you know what the weirdest thing about this trade deadline was? That you've got an extreme number of teams that have 2 wins right now. For being midway through the season, and as I looked at all those teams, it started to make a little bit more sense. I mean, you look at the Titans and the Jaguars are 2 of those 2-win football teams. They're in the division. Unlikely that you're going to pull off something really good with one of those teams.
Yep.
Like Brandon Scherff is a veteran guard who's older for the Jaguars that I figured, all right, you know what? He can come in and at least steady the ship
would've
at left
great.
Guard.
Yep.
Jags probably aren't going to do it with you.
Yeah.
But then you look at some of the other 2-win teams, and they're in weird spots where, all right, I mean, the Browns, they might feel like, all right, we got to just beat the damn Ravens, and we've got our quarterback situation better than it had been before. Let's see what we can do with this. The Dolphins are a 2-win football team.
Yeah.
But they probably feel like, man, we can't get our quarterback back and just abandon all hope and not have some kind of Cinderella run here at the end of the year or in the second half of the season. So there probably wasn't as good a market as there should have been for a bunch of teams that are 2-win. The Patriots. I don't think the Patriots even understand how to live in a world yet where they're sellers at the trade deadline.
No, you're probably right.
They don't want to accept it, you know?
You're probably
right. It's like when a girl, a little rich girl all of a sudden realizes that she's got to sign up for food stamps or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It takes a while.
It does.
She's like, oh, yeah. How do I even do it? Do I have to actually go somewhere in person?
Stand in line?
What the hell?
I got to stand in line for this. What the hell? All right. Payne and Pendergast. We'll talk plenty about the trade deadline today on the show. We promise. Ross Tucker was on with us yesterday. This was This was one of the better Ross Tucker interviews. I thought he laid out some of the offensive line issues for the Texans really, really well. His level of urgency about it scared me because there's a certain Texan that he thinks might be a little scared right now. And we've got that for you. If you missed it yesterday, we've got the highlights of that coming up next.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. We'll talk more trade deadline as we go on. Top of the hour, we'll get into it yesterday and what it all means. Probably one of the biggest trades yesterday impacts the Texans heavy on Sunday. The Za'Darius Smith trade from Cleveland to Detroit. Yeah,
good for Detroit. The strong gets strong. You know what? I'm an idiot. I'm a fraud for not bringing that up every time we talk about this. When you talk about, I'm trying to soothe myself by saying, hey, there's only about 15 trades or so on any given trade deadline. Not a big deal. But when you watch teams that are contenders like Washington or the Lions, who are already really, really good and already firing on all cylinders, they replace Aiden Hutchinson with Za'Darius Smith. And, oh, okay. Yeah, I'd like some of that in my life.
In my opinion, we're going to get to Ross Tucker, but just to follow up on your point, in my opinion, the three best teams in football are all on the Texans' schedule over the next 2 months. The Lions, the Chiefs, and the Ravens. All of them made moves to make their teams better. You know, the Lions got Za'Darius Smith to backfill the void left by Aiden Hutchinson's injury. The Chiefs went out and got DeAndre Hopkins and Josh Uche. And the Ravens traded for Deontay Johnson. And yesterday they traded nothing to get Tre'Davious White, who's not nearly the player he was, obviously, when he was an all-pro with Buffalo. But these are moves that at least send a message to the fan base. And I know that the goal isn't to send messages to the fan base, but we are the fan base, so we're reacting to this.
Right.
They're all making moves. Like, they're all, at the very least, they're building depth. You know what I mean? Like,
you look at the Chiefs even going back to the Kadarius Toney trade. Yeah. You know, that's where you're bringing in, and that was like a third and a fifth round swap or something.
Yeah.
That's a move that, you know, people raised their eyebrows at that one because Kadarius Toney, kind of a whack job. But it ended up paying off big dividends for them that year.
Yeah, big time. All right, let's get to Ross Tucker. He's our Odyssey NFL insider. He joined us yesterday, and he was going through an exercise where he was going through each of the sacks, kind of rapid fire, that the Texans gave up in the Thursday night game to the Jets. And at one point, he stopped at, I think, the fifth sack. And this was one that was less on the line and more on CJ. And he said something that had many people listening to this show very concerned.
This is the biggest concern for me for the Texans going forward, is that Stroud is like starting to get a little bit spooked.
Yeah.
Like Stroud is, you know, the fifth one, Stroud's backing up. Like he's kind of afraid of what's going on, so he backs up. Tunsil took the guy around at like 8 or 9 yards. That should be okay. But Stroud dropped back too far. Didn't want to step up, and also the running back, I couldn't see who it was, but the running back totally missed on Sherwood, the safety coming late.
Okay, so Seth, does that match up with what you see when you're watching?
Yeah, I think that there's, and steadily over the course of this season, I think we've started to see some of Stroud's better tendencies, things that he was downright precocious with as a rookie, his pocket awareness, his presence, his calm under duress, you know, not taking, remember, he took a bunch of sacks in the first two games of the year and then didn't take any at all after the, for the next several games. He was really, really advanced by rookie standards when it comes to all that stuff. And now, because he's been under constant duress, it feels like he's regressed a little bit. And, you know, he's doing things that rookie quarterbacks do when they're not used to NFL pockets yet, bailing out the back of a pocket instead of stepping up, all these things. And he still does it. Like, he is still stepping up in the pocket. The problem is, like, one of those plays where he stepped up in the pocket collapsed so thoroughly that Quinnen Williams poked the ball out.
Yeah.
And that's where I think you could almost identify the point where, in this game, CJ's really not going to feel comfortable doing all of those things that he's capable of doing, because the pressure is coming from all directions way too intensely. And the pocket evaporates. There's no pocket to step up into. That's what I worry about. I don't think it's not approaching the point where it's irreversible or anything, because it's real. He's not seeing ghosts out there.
No.
He's seeing actual human beings that weigh 320 pounds coming after him.
Correct.
Right. You know, those aren't ghosts.
No.
That's Quinnen Williams.
Yes.
Damn it.
Yeah. I'm at this point, I'm more worried about the physical harm on CJ than I am the psychological. You know what I mean? Like, I think he's a mentally strong football player. I think he responds to adversity really, really well. He doesn't point fingers, anything like that. At this point, I'm just worried about the sheer number of hits that he's taking.
Right. Well, the one point in the game where he got hit from behind and he got up kind of holding his kidneys and looked like he was in a lot of pain, and that was in the first half. Yeah, there's more and more and more of that. So whether I'm not worried that this is going to be some kind of David Carr situation, because we don't necessarily know exactly what David Carr would have turned into. We never saw the upside that CJ has showed so far. But I do worry that, yeah, the actual physical bludgeoning. I mean, CJ's a big dude, but he's not built like Ben Roethlisberger.
No,
you know,
he's not
built like one of these guys that can just take punishment after punishment after punishment and be all right. At some point, it's gonna add up.
Yep. Ross Tucker, continuing with his chat with us yesterday, he said that, you know, it's not just the offensive line. CJ is definitely part of the sack problem.
It's bothering me. Like, some of these, he has to throw the ball away.
Yeah.
And I'd have to go back and study it. Maybe there was a bunch of other plays in the game where he threw it away. I don't remember seeing that many during the game. But he's also, you know, taking some sacks now that he shouldn't. He's like watching himself get sacked, if that makes sense, right? He's bracing for contact. It's bad. Like, they got to fix this quick, or they're going to have no shot in the playoffs.
This is where, when you go back to really the point where I started to get concerned, was in the Green Bay game, because on that play, the ill-fated throw to Tank Dell on third down, it was incomplete, and it didn't make sense from a game management standpoint. Nobody quite knew what was going on. When I realized, on that play, he actually had good pass protection. He's doing what he's trying to be a guy that gets rid of the ball quickly. If the first read is open, take it. In that situation, yeah, the first read was open to Tank Dell, but it really didn't do anything for you. If he'd held on to the ball, John Metchie was coming open. You know, the safety had bit and was out of the way, and John Metchie could have been open for a touchdown. And yet, that would have been his third read that he would have had come all the way back from the right to the left to get to, and he didn't feel comfortable and confident there. And yeah, he's stuck in this world right now where he's got to make these decisions about, all right, well, I know I got to get rid of the ball quicker, and I also just don't trust that I keep getting burned when I try to wait for things to come open. So what do you do? And I think that's where it's got to come back on Bobby Slowick too, where, man, some of it's got to be by design. Bunch routes, picks, stuff like this to just get somebody open early in the down. Get them off of you. It's like when somebody's verbally bullying you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to get them off you.
Mm-hmm.
You got to come up with a sick burn.
Mm-hmm.
And Bobby's not giving CJ the sick burn.
No.
Give us a sick burn.
Yeah.
That you can get the bully off of you, embarrass him,
no.
You know, make fun of something that he's really sensitive about in front of his girlfriend.
Yeah,
get him off of you.
Bobby's plays right now are, I know you are, but what am I?
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Yeah.
Oh, you think we can't throw it deep versus too high?
Right. I'm rubber, you're glue. Whatever you say bounces off me and sticks to you.
That's right,
a
yeah.
sick burn right now.
Or
like,
you
thanks.
Say something like sticks and stones can break, you know,
exactly.
can break my bones.
Exactly.
But,
that's
but
the checkdown.
But meanwhile, you can totally tell that, yeah, it's no, the words are definitely hurting you.
You know what's funny? The example you brought up is a really good one, that third and 15 play or whatever it was towards the end of the Green Bay game. Because not only was CJ like checking down instead of taking a shot at the end zone, that was a play where it was literally detrimental to do what you were doing. Like,
right,
you know, normally
right.
you check down on third and 15, you know, you take what that's a take what the defense gives you or take a profit when you can, blah, blah, blah. That was like, no, you're doing something that's stopping the clock and allowing
right,
Green
right.
Bay to keep their last time out. Like you've lost. It's not just you're not taking what's in the back of the end zone there. It's you are literally doing something. You would have been better off falling on the ground on that play than throwing the ball to Tank Dell.
You're right, exactly. You're better off taking a sack. Yeah,
yeah.
Let the clock run down, make him burn a timeout,
yeah.
whatever it might
yeah.
be. That was a miscarriage of game management on multiple levels, and that's where it felt. Like, looking back on it, that third down play in the Green Bay game was, we might look back on that as like, oh man, that was really, really the moment where everything started to go backwards.
Canary in the coal mine, baby.
Yeah, yeah, because all of these things you felt good about. Remember last year we were gushing about how good the and all offseason I was gushing about how good the Texans were in game management for having a rookie offensive coordinator,
yeah.
a rookie quarterback, a rookie defensive-minded head coach.
Yes.
That they did a really good job, and that all regressed this year. In that moment in the Green Bay game, you had a quarterback who hadn't been talked to by the coaches about what their strategy was at that moment. You know, and then you've got an offensive coordinator that's calling that play in that situation, anticipating a different coverage. They didn't get the coverage they thought they were going to see. And then you've got a quarterback who's been uninformed about what their actual strategy is at that point, and he's still a young quarterback, just, you know, not making the right decision on that play.
Yep.
Partly because he can't trust the pass protection.
That's right.
Like, it's everybody involved. It's the pass protection. It's CJ. It's Bobby Slowick. It's D'Amico Ryans as the head coach not having a better handle on that situation, and it's really starting to snowball, and now you're facing one of the very best football teams in the league this week.
5 Hour Energy fan line texting in, and texter says, the second Diggs went down, we should have gone after Hopkins or another game-changing wide receiver. We don't have the depth at wide receiver if one goes down. I forget the whole sequence of when Diggs went down versus the Hopkins trade. I can't remember which came first. DeAndre Hopkins coming back here is probably a more complex thing than maybe, you know, than maybe we all know above the surface. But I will say this, just take Hopkins' name out of it. That's probably the thing I'm most nervous about, Seth, that they could have addressed yesterday and they didn't address. It's not guard, because I don't know what was available out there, and I don't know if whatever was available is better than Jarrett Patterson or guys on other practice squads. Like, that's how bad Kenyon Green was, is that you can have very logical conversations about picking certain guys up, veteran guys, off of somebody yeah. else's practice squad and them being better than Kenyon Green. The wide receiver thing I am concerned about, because it's not as though Tank Dell and Nico Collins have not dealt with injuries these last couple of years. That's the part that scares me.
The deal was October 23rd for DeAndre. The Colts game was October 27th.
So they couldn't have gotten Hopkins.
Yeah.
He was already a Kansas City Chief.
That would have been fun. What a fun story that would be.
Hopkins coming back?
Yeah.
I think so, too.
Let's live in an alternate universe this morning where DeAndre Hopkins... You know, I know there's a big chunk of people out there right now that wish they were in an alternate universe. You know, that's just the, you know, today, they're like half of whatever, or less than half of like whatever.
We can go find
the percentage of people that wish you were in a ball. Yeah. Like, okay, let's do this with football. Let's pretend that we're in an alternate universe where the Texans traded for DeAndre Hopkins.
Yep. Text message. Check this out. The Lions are only paying the remaining $605,000 of Za'Darius Smith's contract. Adam Schefter reports. Yeah, that's the other thing with all these deadline trades.
Yeah.
It's not just the draft compensation, but the other subtext, the other bit of news that comes in with it is, hey, the Lions are picking up all of this, or you know, which team is picking up the salary tab on all this stuff.
Well, you know, I think this is also the point where I think really people have been saying it already, but now I think it comes full force where, all right, how much man, these guys spent the whole offseason getting all this praise and adulation. They were just talking about how they're going to be doing football 301 this year as opposed to 101, all of that. And then you stand pat at the trade deadline acting like, yep, all the work we needed to do was done in the offseason.
Yeah.
Yep, this is this right here, this team that can win one-score football games and not show up versus two of the three genuinely good teams that you've played. I was including the Jets in that. And you just didn't show up against the Jets either. Hey. So it feels a whole lot like, man, boy, these guys are really reading their press clippings in the offseason because they think this is good enough, apparently.
Yeah.
Apparently this is good enough. This abomination of game management, pass protection, and everything else. Nope, these are the guys you're rolling with.
They got to get it fixed quick, man. Detroit is really good, and they got better yesterday.
They need Nico. There's a lot on Nico's shoulders. It's not fair. It's not fair. He's not going to all of a sudden fix the pass protection issues systemically, but he can make it a lot easier for these guys with their haphazard play calling and game management to get by. It's given somebody, you know what? Oh, you're a poor marksman. Okay, well, here, we'll give you a missile launcher instead to go kill that mosquito.
Nico, yeah. This is the world he lives in. Heavy is the head that wears the team-friendly $24 million a year contract, as the old saying goes. You know, that's a pressure being a number one wide receiver. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Let's do headlines. We'll circle back to the trade deadline. Biggest deals that were made yesterday. What did the Texans do? D'Amico and CJ meet with the media today, so we'll talk about that. First set of college football playoff rankings are out as well. What do we think about that? That is all coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, let's get to headlines. Seth and I are chit-chatting off the air here. Meanwhile, we've got a show to do. Headlines.
How long were we back?
Like 5 seconds. Ben, how long? Okay. Like 5 seconds were we chit-chatting? Yeah, like 5 seconds. Not too bad. Trade deadline yesterday. slow one for the Texans, and I think no buyer moves made by the Texans. There was one move made. They traded Khalil Davis, defensive tackle, to the 49ers for a 7th-round pick in the 2026 draft. If you are, I saw some of this, like, oh, they're shipping guys out. Oh, they're a seller all of a sudden. Like, no. I get it. They're trading away a player. He was going to get cut when they're bringing all these guys back. So they're getting something for a guy who is basically going to be put at the end of the driveway with the recyclables.
You got Jerry Hughes coming back as a defensive end, but also remember that, D'Nico Autry is going to be down there on third downs playing inside. You've got Mario Edwards coming off of his suspension. So, and you've got, as much as people were wringing their hands over the defensive tackle position, you don't have top line guys at defensive tackle, but you've got a lot of depth. Between Kurt Heinisch, Tim Settle, and the way he's been playing, and Khalil Davis, you had a lot of guys that are good role players there. And it's one of the more bloated positions on the depth chart. They were going to have to cut a defensive lineman.
Yeah, yeah. So no moves made for an offensive lineman, and that's not just the Texans. There were no offensive linemen traded at all at the deadline yesterday. So we don't know if there's a deal that the Texans could have gotten in on. You know, did this guy go to this team for a 4th-round pick? Oh, I'd have given a 3rd for that guy. Can't really play that game with the offensive line. The biggest deal yesterday that got done was Marshon Lattimore going to Washington. And again, that was probably another deal that if Texan fans that were following the trade deadline closely saw that deal, I could imagine a lot of them. In fact, I saw some of them going, look, Washington's all in. And they weren't even a thought at the beginning of the year. They're all in behind their quarterback on a rookie contract going and getting Marshon Lattimore. Would you have done the Marshon Lattimore trade if you were the Texans? And for those who don't know, it was Marshon Lattimore and a 5th going to Washington for a 3rd, a 4th, and a 6th.
The one thing I wonder about, because Nick's got to balance the long term with the short term and everything, is that with Marshon Lattimore, you're bringing in, like, what is it moving past this year? You've already got 2 starting cornerbacks, and how do you expect it all to shake out moving on into the future? And maybe that just would have made things, and you're gonna have to pay Derek Stingley probably in a couple of years.
Yeah.
That I would have loved it. I would have been super psyched for it, but I understand why they didn't. I mean, the fact of the matter is the Texans were extremely active in the offseason, and I think in a lot of ways Nick probably just spent all his ammo for what he was comfortable spending in the offseason.
Yeah.
And went into it maybe feeling like, yeah, we're not we're out as far as we want to go out on the perimeter.
Yeah.
And we don't want to get into a situation where we have to push any other veterans. We got a lot of old guys on the roster. Yeah. Do we want to push more money off into the future? And that's probably where it was. It was a matter of risk appetite and risk tolerance, which is frustrating as a short-minded or a short-term-minded fan of like me. But I get it. It would be a lot more fun right now to have one of those guys on the roster.
Yeah, I'm less concerned with the splash move not getting made and more concerned with, okay, you throw fifth, sixth, and seventh round picks around like they're Halloween candy. You could have had a couple guys here that are better than maybe the guys you have at other positions, but I'm not losing sleep over it. That's what I would have liked to have seen done, was get some depth pieces.
I tweeted this out yesterday right before the trade deadline. I said, I'm staying in the country no matter who wins the election, but if the Texans don't trade for 7 all-pro players for absurdly cheap compensation, you can reach me in Argentina.
Yeah.
So I meant that as a joke, obviously. When I first wrote it, I said trade for an all pro player for absurdly cheap compensation, which obviously like that's a joke, except I figured, nah, enough people think I'm serious there.
Hopkins was an all pro. Tre'Davious White was an all pro.
I'm going to say 7 all pro players.
Yeah.
I would say 25% of the people responding to that still thought I was dead serious.
Welcome to the internet.
They had to hold my hand and explain to me what the issues on the team are right now. Yeah.
Welcome to the internet.
I hate it so much.
Za'Darius Smith traded to Detroit. That's the one trade that actually lands on the Texans' front lawn more than any in the short term here, because he goes to the Lions, and the Lions, who already had been kind of weathering the storm post-Aiden Hutchinson. You know, they still have a really good defense even without Aiden Hutchinson, which makes it scary to think about what they might be like when he comes back next year. But Za'Darius Smith is a guy who, as you pointed out, Seth, the Lions had to blitz a whole lot more to get home and put pressure on quarterbacks since losing Aiden Hutchinson. With Za'Darius Smith, they get a guy who can win one-on-one matchups on the outside, allows them to drop some more guys back in coverage. You better get Nico Collins back this weekend.
Right. Well, okay, now this is what I would say, too. Like, I think, honestly, let's think about this. Like, what are the Texans feeling internally about their team right now? Look, we've already had trade for a wide receiver. What makes you think this offense is going to do something with a plethora of really good receivers?
That's fair.
They had that earlier in the year, and they weren't an impressive offense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is, so it's more than just, oh, you got to bring in a new receiver. And do what? Be disappointing offensively? Like, they've got to get some other stuff right with the guys they have before I can even think about or talk about, ooh, yeah, with bringing a really good wide receiver, and then it's off to the races. No, they already had that, and they don't know what to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
So between Bobby Slowick, the pass protection in general, which includes the offensive line, but also does include the tight ends, the running backs, and C.J. Stroud himself, there's stuff broken on this offense right now that I don't. It's like giving a wad of cash to somebody that's bad at money management.
Yeah,
they're going to squander it.
Yep.
They will squander that. You take somebody that's gone bankrupt 3 times already in their life, and then just hand them a boatload of cash. They're going to go bankrupt. And this offense right now, they are bankrupt. They don't know how to deal with the assets they already have.
Yep.
And that goes right back to Bobby Slowick.
Yes. College football playoff rankings, first set of them are out. It's the first set of rankings we've gotten in the new 12-team playoff world. Top 5 goes like this: Oregon number 1, Ohio State number 2, Georgia number 3, Miami number 4, and then UT finishes, right now, they are a top 5 team. They're 5th in the rankings. Other Texas teams in the top 25, SMU at 13, Aggies hanging around at 14. So if the Aggies take care of their business, they should be a playoff team. We'll see. They've still got Texas on the schedule. That helps. Still got a chance to get the SEC title game. That definitely helps. I watched it last night, Seth, the reveal of the new college football playoff rankings. It was far simpler when it was only 4 teams. With the 12-team format, you know, they're having to, you know, the 4 highest-ranked conference champions get a bye. So they're having to like make assumptions with who's going to be the conference champ. So like BYU is ninth in these polls, but they're the highest ranked Big 12 team. So they got slotted as the four seed because they would be the the fourth rate highest rated conference champion. And I'm watching this, and I get it while I'm watching it, but I'm thinking of the average Joe watching it, and I'm like, okay, this is not nearly as like viewer friendly a reveal. As the four team was just, here's the four best teams. Here you go. Yeah. Here's the next two out. I got it watching it, but it's more inclusive now. You know, you got a lot of schools that are like, okay, I was watching it more so with my school based on, okay, where I knew they were going to be in the top 12. So I'm like, where are they seated? There's none of this chewing on my nails. Like, are they in the playoff? Are they out of the playoff?
Yeah.
I'm still a 14 playoff guy, but when the 12 team playoff rolls around, I'm sure I'll be very, very happy.
The difference between the first best college team and the 12th best college team is so vast. It feels almost kind of like, it felt like watching to see which Ivy League team is going to go to the NCAA basketball tournament. You know, you're like, oh, yeah, scrappy Princeton. Yeah, they might make it out of the first round this year.
Woo. Well, and yet, the 5 versus 12 matchup, which would be the matchup that includes that theoretical Ivy League team,
right?
It would be Boise State, who has maybe the best player in the country on their team.
That is where, the bye week and everything, that does. It's not the same. It's not going to be the same as a 1 versus 16 or a 1 versus a play-in or something like that. There is still more potential for drama in the early stages of the tournament.
Alabama, like right now, the way the seeding plays out, Penn State plays Notre Dame at Penn State. Alabama plays Texas at UT in a playoff game. Yeah. Like, that's pretty cool. But even that, like that 12th one you're talking about, I'm like, man, Boise State would go to Ohio State. Now, Ohio State probably ends up housing them, but it might be fun for a while. But Boise State has a little bit of history doing stuff like that. You never know. You never know. So we'll see. But the first reveal was last night. All right, into the 7 o'clock hour we go. What is Nick Caserio's view on the trade deadline? He was on with John Harris and Mark Vandermeer. The interview's up on YouTube. I'm guessing it runs tonight on Texans All Access. Nick Caserio's view on the trade deadline, does it match up with the activity or inactivity that the Texans had over the last couple of days? That is next.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, 3-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.